and then
hello
you're
and
gonna...
welcome to the Carbitrage Podcast, episode 315. I am Eric Berger, joined as always by my co-host Ryan Sinensky. Hello.
This is me, and this is me trying to peer pressure Eric into spending all of his life savings on an Altair 8800.
I just don't need an Altair 8800.
If you fully upgrade an Altair 8800, you can have a monitor. And you don't have to just look at flashing LEDs on the side of the computer, and that's your I.O. experience.
The human interface can indeed be light and switch.
Yeah, they've proven that.
I am so upsetty spaghetti.
Anyway.
I just want the Whopper.
You want the Whopper?
I want the Whopper. I want to be called Joshua or something. No, he is Joshua. I am Professor Falcon.
Anyway,
patreon.com/carbitrage. Open-ended levels of support, 99 cents a month, helps us buy hosting and beer. Patreon.com/carbitrage. I am drinking a Colorado Kool-Aid because I don't know why I grabbed that instead of a Hams.
I just told Trig about that song by Johnny Paycheck.
Did he listen to it?
Yes. Excellent. He thought it was hilarious.
Excellent. Good. When you tell me about, like, I am unfathomably more, like, broadly cultured, just, like, the quips before we do Carbitrage episodes, because I do digest.
Yeah.
And I listen.
It's very cultured.
And I'm just like, mother of God. Ryan told me about this shit, like, 3 years ago.
And now I know. Yeah, you're able to hold conversations with people in weird places.
And people are like, wait, you know about this? I'm like, yeah. Let me elaborate as to why I know about it. Anyway, Colorado Kool-Aid, we did all that. Anyway, first topic.
You got your knife-proof earmuffs?
I do not.
Better not go spit in any Mexicans' ears.
I'm going to have a beer cerveza.
There's three people that will ever listen to this podcast that will have listened to that song by Johnny Paycheck. So the story of it
UI
is...
UI Trig.
The very TLDR is, the song is about this guy going to a bar in southern Texas. And
as you do.
This drunk white guy starts yelling at Johnny Paycheck's Mexican friend, and his friend gets into a bar fight, which involves the guy giving his ear cut off, and then goes and hands the ear to the guy who picked the fight with him and says, if you ever get the urge to spit beer in somebody's ear, you can go spit in your own. And there you go. That's how you enjoy a Colorado Kool-Aid.
Somehow, already, today, I have talked to two other human beings about spitting in somebody's drink.
Why? What kind of world do we live in where there's songs about
this
happening?
I blame it on Corey. Because a big titty goth barista at Starbucks yesterday somehow wanted her to spit in his drink.
Oh, that's
because
fair.
Apparently he was very enamored by this young lady.
That's understandable.
But anyway, I want to talk about an Autopian thing where they went through as staff writers automotive jobs that they had done as DIYs that they will never ever do again. And mm-hmm. I know you work on your car. I work on my cars. I want to hear. What is a job that you have done on your or a friend's car that you've been a part of, doesn't matter, that you have experienced and are so rubbed the wrong way on that you would never consider doing it again? Like, it's a shop job. That's going to a shop. Shop's doing that.
Drum brakes.
Okay. That's a really good answer.
Just as a whole. I love drums.
Just in general.
Don't get me wrong. I love drums a lot. I think they're really fascinating. But, no, there's too many springs. I hate it. I want somebody else to be liable for that.
Ultimately, that's what it goes down to.
Yeah, I really want somebody else to be liable for that. Any sort of paint work is also pretty high up on that list.
Yeah, body work in general is like, you need a professional to do that.
Repinning wiring harnesses.
Really?
Don't like doing that either.
Oh, man.
And it's not that I'll take it to another shop. I'll just go buy one.
Sure.
Because the amount of time it takes me to do it versus I'm like... I did it on my Civic, and I was just like, I could just buy a wiring harness that's had this done.
I actually love doing that shit.
Oh, well, be my guest. Next time I end up with a dual point fuel injection Honda, I'm going to bring it over to your place or make it multi-point.
As long as you give me the literature, which I know is out there,
yeah, it's
I will decipher it. Yes, that'd be fine.
Readily available.
I've even bought the Schwaben special tool set to do all the pins.
Oh, very good.
Because I've, good. As you know, I've done it. Anyway.
You have a higher tolerance for bullshit than I do.
I own cars that I cannot afford to take to dealers. One thing, valve cover gaskets on a BMW M70 V12.
Okay.
Both intake manifolds have to come off to do that.
Ooh, that's bad.
And you can't reach any of the nuts at all.
Okay,
because they interweave in the center of the V, and I cannot. Bad. That one's really, really bad. That's it, actually. That's
not the Lamborghini starter.
No, that was fine.
That was terrible.
The Ferrari engine, that was fine. The valve cover gaskets are that bad on that V12.
You know, I would say that the A340E swap on the Cresta would be up there, but everything on it is more or less easy to do. You just need very specific tools for it. Like, I'm slowly coming to acceptance. I need to just buy a transmission jack.
If you can find out who has mine, you may have it. I have a floor transmission hydraulic jack.
Yeah.
I don't know who has it.
Fun fact, you can buy adapters for normal floor jacks on Amazon for like $50.
You can, but I would be sketched out by that because I just don't have that much actual area at the top there. Because the transmission jack is like a double thingy.
Yeah, no, this one just is like bolts into where the normal head bolt is for it. But it's like, I would get an actual transmission jack before I do like the Buick, but the A340E doesn't weigh that much.
Fair.
I suppose
aluminum case, yeah.
It doesn't weigh anything really.
I wish.
But it's just like, it's more than I'm willing to deal with. It sucks. But I'm not going to say that I'll never do that again because that's easy enough where I really hate doing it, but it's not so bad that I don't want to pay somebody to do it.
It's an expensive job to shop, too. Like, let's be real.
Timing belts and chains as a whole on cheap cars, like on my Fiat.
Yeah.
Like, if I screw that up, that's on me. But if a shop screws up, that's the shop's problem.
Right, but it's also pretty easy to do.
It is easy to do. But that's the thing. If it's something like where it's like
daily driver maintenance, though, I could see that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Just like, I don't want this to be my problem. Like, I don't care. Like, like on the van, when I do the 2.5 swap, I'm going to do that timing chain myself.
Yeah.
But like on the Fiat, like if I screw it, and like the 1 in a million chance I screw it up, it really puts me in a pickle. But
I did an ES330 timing belt on our ES before I brought it down to Florida.
Yeah.
Got it all buttoned back together. I drove it to, I think, Applebee's down the road. Check engine light comes on. I'm like, what? Driving fine. No issue. Pull it up. Cam phase mismatch. I'm like,
you were off by like a tooth.
One tooth in the back cog. So not only did I have to completely tear it all back down, but I had to realign a cog I couldn't see. So I had to guess which way. Luckily, I got it right. But front wheel drive V6 timing.
Yeah, that's stupid. Just pay somebody else to do that. Like,
pretty much. Even like so the Phantom, I don't think I've even told you this, but I did the service on that thing last year, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was shift flaring and kind of dumping into neutral. Exact same problem. When it's hot now, after I did all that service, I talked to this really, really nice guy I just found on Google. He's just got this crappy-ass GeoCities website, but he rebuilds ZF6 valve bodies. That's all he does.
Okay.
Did not list the HP32, but I emailed him. He's like, yep. That sounds like you've got this pressure control piston because ZF used, and I quote, aluminum the consistency of soft unsalted butter in the first gen valve bodies.
Lovely.
So anyway, I now have to rip that transmission back apart this season. So that's going to be probably my only project because, as you know, it doesn't fit on the lift with the door shut.
Yeah.
So I have to pull the trans off, put the pan back on with no valve body, and then roll it forward in neutral under the lift, which is
awful.
It's going to be fun. Anyway, cars are dumb. I don't know why I like cars.
Yeah, that's a bad time. That's also a car where you're kind of screwed, where it's too expensive to have somebody else do it.
Not only that, I've talked to both Eurotech. I talked to Seth because he is a smart guy at the end of the day. Whatever. And I talked to Maury's Luxury. Maury's Luxury won't touch it unless it's a full trans replacement. And Eurotech's like, I think it's this, and yes, we can do it, but I know Eurotech's pricing, the shop that charges $3,000 to put a radiator in an E36, I don't even want to know.
What?
I sat there waiting for an oil change on my boss's car, and I saw them issue an estimate to a guy for $2,800 to replace a radiator in a 98 328i. No, he paid it.
Oh. Well, I've sent people go-away prices like that. Because, like, that's a thing. Like, if you
but
have
they
a,
trust Eurotech if
you
the
have
sponsor.
If you have a shop, and, like, you have a car that's just an absolute basket case.
Yeah.
And it's, like, this is a pretty low-value customer where it's the customer, like, not really worth their time, not worth the time at all. I've personally sent people a go-away estimate where I'm just like, hey, you want us to get your van ready for your road trip to Mexico? and you've not done any maintenance after buying it 3 years ago. No, it's a Vanagon. Come on. Okay. And like, it's always a Vanagon. Whenever I'm talking like this, it's a Vanagon. Like, Vanagon.
It's a Vanagon.
They're always the worst in every way. Like, people at work, like, it's funny. The techs didn't understand why I hated Vanagon so much. Like, they're newer than the air cooled things. I'm like, yeah, but the air cooled things are so turbo fucked that everything needs to get replaced. Mm-hmm. It's easy for me. Vanagons, yeah, I have to go find weird shit from around the world.
It's just like a kit for the air cooleds.
Yeah, like literally, no, we have a kit. Like, we would have, there's a kit for 2.0 timing chains, and there's a kit for air cooleds. And like, literally, it was a pre-programmed kit where it loaded in all the part numbers that you need.
Yep.
And then you'd have a variable like, is this Tiguan? Is this a 4, whatever, for the variance of 2 OTs. But anyway, so Vanagon, like, I just send them, like, I'd have people where it's like, yeah, I want to get this, like, already. I'm like, okay, you need $25,000 worth of maintenance. And they're like, okay, what do I need to do today? And I'm like,
$25,000.
I'm like, well, it's realistically today you need to do like 10 grand, which is like dangerously close to what I feel like you might actually be willing to do for this road trip. So I'm going to say you need to do 15 grand because like, you need to go away and get another vehicle because this isn't a feasible thing for you to like it's like one of those things where it's like a $15,000 job and it's like you need it in a week and a half. And it's like, ooh, if every part is expedited and you're willing to pay for expedited shipping, which I know you are, that might be doable, but like if there's one bolt that's stripped in the wrong way and takes out the wrong part,
the text too, though.
That everybody's mad, and it's like, I don't want to fucking deal with it. If you're willing to spend the extra $5,000 for me fucking around with this,
yeah,
then yes,
it's you're worth paying it. A lot of opportunity cost.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. Is like, there's an extra $5,000 of fucking around, and like that's, I can see Eurotech doing that. Like, mm-hmm. You said $3,000 for like a radiator on an E36. Like, maybe the E36 is just like a terrible E36, and they're, and like,
it definitely was, because it was a 96 convertible auto 328 with an owner that might have been a huge problem.
Yeah, so they might have just been giving him a go-away price that maybe. You heard, and the guy just underestimated his go-away. The guy's like, sure, and I'm like, fuck.
I was so close to saying, like, oh, I was going to get up, like, I'll just do it for you, dude. Like, I'll do it for half. Anyway, I didn't, but...
Yeah, that guy would have been just... terrible to live with.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
No, there's a lot of jobs. But that's the thing is, like, I despise working on cars. Like, I like cars. I like weird tinkering cars, but like, I like upgrading cars, but I don't like tinkering and, or like, I hate like actually like just trying to do like maintenance. It's my least favorite thing.
I guess I kind of understand. And for me, it's psyching myself to get a job started.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing I really hate. And once I'm actually working on it, people have known this about me for ages.
You're fine.
If you need me to work on it, like, go trap me by the car. And as long as I turn the first nut, it's done.
Yeah. Once you're actually doing it. But yeah, it's like, so yeah, that's actually, I can't kind of go into my next topic, which is, I forgot how much of a joy my Cresta is to work on.
Very good.
Because I was talking about how I did my, timing chain, or not my timing chain. It doesn't have a timing chain. We were doing my transmission because I had to, like, the torque converter, it came partially out and got seized in position. I had to pull it back out. It was very terribly annoying. But, yeah, so I'm pulling the transmission back out and putting it back in again. And it's like, pulling the transmission out of the car is actually super easy. All the bolts were designed to be serviced. Like, they're designed to be in a way where it's like, oh, you can just get that.
Was that an all electronic control trans? So it doesn't have like a throttle cable or a vacuum?
It does have a little throttle cable on the side of it. Yeah.
Okay.
But it is electronically, like the valve body is electronically controlled. But it's like, it's just like all the bolts, like you don't have to like do 5 other jobs to do this one job. Like, it's just there.
You like get it, all of them, with an extension and a wobble?
There's the top 2 transmission bell housing bolts require an excessively long extension of 5 feet. But other than the 5 foot long extension you need for the top 2 transmission bolts,
buying those super was easy. So nice.
Yeah. Now I have them.
Same.
I've got 2. So what I did is I got really clever. It's like, I knew I was going to need more than what I assumed I needed. I was right. Cause I originally was like, I'm just going to buy one. And I'm like, actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to get the length of the car in extensions and then I'll subtract from that. Sure. And I was right. Because I needed like extra two extensions.
Isn't it fun how much flex is in a 5 foot long extension?
Oh, this is a 36 inch and then a 12 inch and then a 3 inch. But okay. There's almost none.
Really?
Weirdly enough. Yeah, I got impact grade ones.
So the black oxide. I gotcha. Yeah. Mine are chrome vanadium, whatever it is. And
yes, the chrome ones do make some movement.
They do.
But these are really, really, really nice and simple. So yeah, no, the Cresta is just great to work on. I just wish it was a better car.
Just leveled.
Yeah, it's the engine. The 7M sucks. It's not a good engine. Like,
I want to see the Cresta driving again. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I want to see it driving. Like, that's actually why I'm getting it going, because I want to be able to like drive it to like car meets and stuff with my friends. So my Fiat. If Fiat's fine, but it's like,
it's just not as interesting as the Cresta is.
Cresta's really cool, and like, I'm going to keep it as a grandpa car because I like it being a grandpa car. Like, it's just comfy. And people are say, hey, why don't you put a manual in that? And I'm like, why don't you get your own and put a manual in it? I like this the way it is. Like, I just want this to be a grandpa car.
It works.
If this A340e has a problem, then we'll consider a manual. But
it probably won't.
And manual probably won't end up going in there because it'll probably be easier for me to find a functioning A340E.
Probably, and I don't know the half of, like, I assume, like, maybe Mark III Super Pedals would work or something like that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of, yeah. It bolts up because it's, like, the same firewall as a Cresta.
Yeah.
But it's just more work.
No, I'm 100% with you. And even you are very well aware of how much of a manual elitist gatekeeper I am. And, like, there are cases where, again, with the Phantom, like, I understand that this is just a car that will always have an automatic, and I will just have to work around
it. It just needs an automatic, and that's fine. And
just
that's all
right. The car needs to work. I need to be able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I want to be able to turn the key and go.
I also want something that's, like, you know, not quite the Buick where it's as big as a Buick, but something that's kind of nice that Janet can drive around, and it's Cresta. And if the 7M gives me any trouble, or the A340E gives me trouble, being a 4200, just it's gonna get a.
But you'll deal with that when it arises.
Yep. When the time comes, it'll be getting a 4L60E and a stock 4200 with a stock wiring harness, and I'll get shoved in behind the glove box. I'll be fine.
Yep. And pro tuners will be like, all right, the three wires are connected. Let's go.
Yep. That's exactly how it'll work. Yeah. It'll just be a functioning 40. It'll be a functioning Trailblazer in the shape of a big Camry.
And nobody will have any idea.
It'll just be a very fast big Camry. Anyway, so.
All right. So I've been talking with Scott, our oldest patron, for a good number of years now because we are huge convertible enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. And in the last at least several years, we've been driving EVs, at least as the main daily driver. But we both have fun gasser combustion kind of beater convertibles that we both drive. I've got my Fiat 124 Lusso. He's got his 135i M Sport. I just saw today, though, although I'm not a fan of Audi and Volkswagen, we'll find a way to screw this up. The TT kind of got canceled, but then uncanceled as an EV. And I'm curious to see if they're going to find a way to ruin that.
There's not any good EV sports cars right now on the market. There's a Tesla Roadster, which is like a Tesla.
Also doesn't exist, unless you're talking about first gen. Right.
So you have one that's 20 years old or vaporware.
And there's two generations of vaporware now. You see that?
Yeah, I saw that. Or you could just get a TT. Like, they'll fuck it up, sure, but like, I've kind of been beaten to a point where I accept that no matter how many facts of Volkswagen being objectively terrible in every sense of the word, people won't believe me. I will always say this is objectively a terrible vehicle, and then somebody will come up and just be a Porsche Macan apologist. I'm just like, I give up. I don't even care about cars anymore. So. Cars are stupid.
They are stupid, but like
that would be really cool. That's the thing is, like, cars are stupid, and like it's very cursed I care about them because I don't want to, and I wish I didn't, but I do.
Right.
So here I am.
And this is going to probably be a bad car, but hopefully that makes it good. I just want this to set a precedent, and I want it to sell well. I want this to sell to the hairdressers that care about the image that they think an Audi gives them and want a convertible, because that will force Mazda maybe to look at it, or force, I don't know, who
Chrysler.
Else? Chrysler.
To make a Sebring convertible. Oh. And then Blake's dad
can
finally have a new car.
Oh, my goodness.
Because his car's almost 20 years old.
You know, if they make a new Sebring, it's going to have a tape/CD head.
Hopefully.
Unit.
I hope it does. I just want the captain to enjoy his convertible Sebring and listen to Stray Cats or whatever and be fine. Like, that'd be just A-OK with
me. A new electric Chrysler Sebring convertible would be a hell of a thing.
Yeah, that would be a long
a hell of a thing. I want to do a reliability test between that and this TT.
I think it would work because it'd just be mechanically a Fiat 500.
Like, true. It's just,
it'd be fine. Like, well, the thing is, the Chrysler Sebring for... Like, I don't get why people ever, like, talk shit about the 90s one. The 2000s, I get. The square one. Kind of yeah. sucked. But the 90s one is just, like, it was a car. It was fine.
Like, so that car came out with
it
the
2.7,
right?
It was a car of its era.
And the first year of that engine, no matter what it was in, had massive sludging issues just yes. because of the how it was designed, but mainly the maintenance schedule. But, like, they figured that out, and the ones that still run will continue to work.
Yeah. It's like, I just don't, like, and, like, the inside's fine. Like,
yeah, it's got a 90s American.
It's got comfy seats. I like the seats, actually. They're very comfy. It's got buttons that you can operate with gloves on. Great. Like, I don't get it. Like, is it a fun car? No. But is a car of its era for a specific purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that car excels in its purpose. Like, there's no other car that's like a 90s Chrysler Sebring, for better or worse.
I bet Jackie Treehorn would drive a Sebring.
Yeah, like if the Big Lebowski took place in 1998, not in 1991, mm-hmm. like Jackie Treehorn would absolutely have a fully specced out Sebring.
The gold package. It's got to mm-hmm. have the gold package.
Yeah, with gold badging. No, that'd be like that's what Bunny would have, not the Jag.
Oh,
yeah, Bunny would have a Sebring.
Right. Oh yeah, she would. Yeah. LXI.
Yeah. So
can we talk about what a great trim name? No, we don't have to.
So Sebrings, I get it. This could just be a new Sebring made in Germany. Like let's do it. I'm fine with that.
We need EV convertibles.
I like convertibles. I prefer seeing moms drive convertibles than moms. Like, I want moms to drive their, like, Barbie convertible they wanted when they were a kid. I don't want moms to drive, like, their crossover because they're self-conscious about something. Because everybody that has a crossover is self-conscious about something.
That is true. And this is fully in line, lock and step with the original TT and its purpose. So
yeah, that's fine. That's what a TT is supposed to be. It's mm-hmm. the TT is the car for the person that owns the hair salon.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to seeing on their Instagram stories them having a great time behind the wheel.
Yeah, no, I want to see a bunch of like Karens with like oblong hair jobs doing
that.
Like,
was a confusing word, but
hair job.
Well, sentence. Oblong
hair
job.
Hair job. Oblong hair jobs.
That,
just doing their thing.
That link is going to remain blue. I don't. I do not wish to know more on that particular one.
So, anyway, talking about EVs, found out that the Faraday Future exists.
Oh, that's the wrong link. Ah, sorry.
No, that's right. I found out the Faraday Future exists. And how do I know it exists? Because all 11 of them were recalled.
So, a company that we talked about when they first, well, I don't know, did their startup thing, but we immediately determined that indeed they were vaporware. They actually made product?
Yeah. There's 11, and all 11 are recalled for issues related to airbags.
Okay. I didn't know they made a car. Does anyone know that they made a car? Does Faraday
Apparently
Future know?
Apparently the NHTSA does.
Okay. they like registered for VINs, and they threw these things away. They're like, uh-oh. Yeah. We don't have those. They all got crushed.
Yeah, no, that's a thing. And so, yeah, the Faraday Future now has been recalled, and I love that.
Look at this pallet rack just full of shit in front of it. I love it.
Yeah, I'm really bummed that this is what became of the Faraday Company, because Michael Faraday was actually a very, very cool scientist.
Well, compared to Edison, absolutely.
He also had a speech impediment.
Good.
He's just really cool.
I mean,
he pronounced his name Michael Faraday.
Faraday?
Yeah.
I'm fine
I love
that.
That's really cool.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm going to start saying Faraday now.
Yeah, he's really cool. He's an endearing little dude. But anyway, I just wanted to say
an
that.
An industrious little fellow.
That's enough about Faraday. Like, what more can I say about a company that I'm apparently exists? They made 11 cars. They can't be that much to talk about.
Well, and I wonder if those even exist, because pre-pros, you and I know what happens to pre-pros.
Yeah, but do they get recalled?
Well, they might. They have VINs.
We'll find out.
That would be an interesting question. Has a pre-production vehicle ever been subject to a recall? Anyway, well, you look that up. I want to talk about an old Oldsmobile engine. That was it's a pun. Oldsmobile.
Oh, wait.
So
yes.
Okay. So
between 2006 and 2018, Volkswagen sold 6,700 pre-production test vehicles on accident to consumers in Germany, and they were 252 of which were recalled for airbags.
Amazing! They sold pre-pro cars
on accident.
I don't. Okay. But that is a Volkswagen thing. Oh, my God.
Yep, there you go.
Anyway, Volkswagen. I want to talk about this 1962 Oldsmobile 455 cubic inch, 32 valve, single cam, pushrod, V8 engine. Because I had no idea this existed. And when I first saw this image, I mean, okay, look. It's pretty obvious after you actually let it sink in. There's no way that's got twin overhead cam, right? There's no front timing case.
Well, also, it's Oldsmobile.
Like, true. But, okay, plug wires in the middle. Well, maybe it's a Hemi. Nope, this actually is a 32-valve engine that just has the world's heaviest valve train.
So does it use, like, a split rocker arm that just is like a Y-shaped rocker?
I'll show you.
Very cool.
Because there's an under valve covery image here.
Very good.
Where is it?
There it is.
Look at that. So, yes.
Okay. Oh. Oh. Mm-hmm. You know what that looks like? That looks a hell of a lot like a Honda D-Series.
It does.
That looks just like a Honda D-Series.
It also looks a lot like the exhaust side of the Alfa Romeo Busso V6 on both the intake and the exhaust side. But I understand why this, being a 32-valve engine, which, of course, as you know, means it breathes better, still redlines at 4,600 RPM because that's all cast iron.
Is insane.
Look at the half, 1962.
Do you know how long the piston skirt was on that? I would be shocked if it's almost like a can koozie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, that piston skirt's a mile long. There's a reason that it can only rev to 4,200.
I would bet that the valve train mass, the valve float, I think, would valve control. I bet that's more of an issue with just the amount of cast iron there. But yes, to your point. Oils, bearings, tolerances, gigantic heavy pistons.
Well, also, I wonder if it's just, like, mechanically limited to that. Like, not just, like, the valve train, but, like, the airflow through the cylinder heads can only rotate all this heavy weight that far.
Maybe. It could be an incredibly poorly designed four-valve head. I have no idea.
Because, well, it's a prototype one.
Yes.
Well, yeah, so back then, America would make some, like, very creative, very strange cylinder heads.
Yep.
So, like, the nail head was one of those things. And, like, so the reason the nail head exists is Buick was trying to figure out, how do you make an engine that can make high power on any gas?
Yep.
Like, you can run on anything from kerosene to 100 octane, like, avgas. Like, and so that's the thing is, like, that's why they have the pent roof design on the nail head, is so that you really don't run into a pinging issue. That's why they never had hardened valve seats, because they never needed.
They eliminated the knock.
Yeah. So that's actually really, really interesting. That's really cool. I love that.
And this it's related to the article, but yeah, that diagram's really sweet. But this one's obviously
Wow, look at that port design. Holy shit. What is going on there? Well, do you see how wonky?
Yes. But, and I think that this was likely the prototype engine that the later prototypes were based on, because it is the same block and everything like that, but they simplified it by running a single camshaft still, so they didn't have to change any of that stuff up. But
this had two?
This proto engine, which is different than the one we just looked at, is a four cam. So that one's got this one's.
Oh, yeah, this is the overhead cam. Yeah.
Gear drive. Weird. Yeah, which is wild. But yeah, no, the actual engine that was slated to go into production but just never did was a pushrod. And I found that to be so incredible.
That's extremely cool. I love the idea of a 32-valve pushrod. That's hilarious.
I kind of do, too. Because, yeah, to your point, it's two gigantic D-series that won't rev.
Yeah.
In the 60s.
That's hilarious. That's really cool. But, yeah, there's just a lot of very strange... I used to think that these pushrod, like, crosspoint V8s in America were, like, just kind of, like, the same. Yeah. They are all very different, and each... Like, I get why
people... And they were engineered to deliberately be different, which is what makes them interesting.
And so that's the thing. Is like, I always thought that they were just, like, kind of generic sort of things. But, like, for instance, like, the Dodge, like, the Hemi, like, that was designed to be not a high-performance engine originally.
The firepower, right? The first gen?
The original Red Ram. Actually, fun fact, the first-generation firepower Red Ram and, what was the other one? The other name for their Hemi... Power Dome? Yes, Dome.
What a great freaking name.
Those are three different engines.
Oh, my God.
The parts do not interchange. They made three different hemispherical engines. They had different displacements and everything. And the Red Ram actually...
What a great name, by the way.
Yeah, great name. That went on to go to Japan.
I'm sorry.
And then that became the Toyota V engine in the Toyota Century.
What the?
What yeah, so the, can if you control the, T Toyota Century Wikipedia. Yeah, and then just go to Toyota Century, that link there.
I'm working on it.
Scroll down just slowly. Stop. 3V engine. Click that. You'll see that this is naturally aspirated 90-degree V8 called the Toyota Hemi. 2.6 to 4 liters.
Made until 97.
With, designed in part by Yamaha with hemispherical, approximately hemispherical combustion chambers based off of a knockdown kit of a Toyota or of a Dodge Red Ram.
Could you put the Yamaha heads on a Red Ram?
I don't know. But that'd be really cool.
That would be really cool.
But
I want a Yamaha casting in my Red Ram.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
God, this cars are so stupid.
1963 to 1997, they had a 1950s Dodge engine in the Toyota Century.
Was it block aluminum alloy? Wow.
Yes. No, it was its own thing. Like they just totally deconstructed it and just So and Dodge didn't give a shit.
That's
yeah.
great because I mean from what I gather, and I'm probably wrong, the biggest issue with those engines, they make great power. They were ruthlessly heavy.
Yes. That was the big problem. They were extremely heavy. And it's actually, so there was the DeSotos that were particularly heavy. However, if you got these Red Rams, why Toyota did this is the Red Ram didn't weigh too much more because it was so small. But it was also so small, it didn't make any power. So
calling this episode Red Ram.
Okay, I named it Buttons.
That's fine.
The reason I named this episode Buttons is because of my next topic.
Oh, okay, perfect.
European regulators plan to incite car makers to bring back buttons because
Volvo, please.
Of all people, abused the system.
What?
Yes.
Oh, no.
The new Polestar has no buttons for like anything. You have a gas pedal, a brake pedal, and then a steering wheel, and then a multimedia screen that does quite literally everything.
Until it doesn't.
Yes.
I really hope my mother's new Volvo doesn't.
I actually mentioned that to my mom, and she was like, wait, what happens when that screen inevitably breaks? I'm like, yeah, like when your dipshit kid like throws their phone like across the car and breaks the screen and then bricks the whole fucking car.
Or it's just 4 years old and it has EMMC for its storage. Yeah. And it's 40 below.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so Volvo abused the system. And so now they're going to require them.
Can we talk about the fact that this is a Volkswagen infotainment system picture, though? I love that so much because they suck.
Starting in January 2026, every new car sold in the EU will require mechanical turn signals, hazard lights, horn, windshield wiper, and an e-call function, which is like OnStar, which is now required to earn the highest possible.
No wipers?
No, it's wipers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So those are the absolute bare minimum to be able to have the highest possible crash test rating. And this is the thing.
I love that.
Is the more things that are implemented into from that list, they're implemented into your multimedia screen, the worse you do on a crash test rating.
I do like that.
Good. I think that if you have a screen of any sort, you should fail your crash test rating because it just means you're going to have a terrible accident. Because you're not paying attention to the road.
Negligence.
You're paying attention to your touchscreen that doesn't have any haptic feedback or feedback of anything.
Can I doom scroll on my infotainment now, too?
Absolutely. You can go through every single...
Can I get a TikTok on my goddamn MCU?
Why not?
Beautiful. I'm sure I'll just get the Musk version. What is that, X now?
So this is my favorite thing, which is the one of my favorite things. The overuse of touchscreens is an industry-wide problem, with almost every vehicle maker moving key controls into a central touchscreen, obligating drivers to take their eyes off the road and raising the risks of distraction crashes, explained Matthew Avery, Director of Strategic Development for the European New Car Assessment Program.
Matthew Avery, I owe you a nice warm lager.
And then also... So, in addition to Euro NCAP, the NHTSA has also issued a similar warning. That's not in this, but I was listening on NPR on Marketplace, because Marketplace is the greatest radio show in the world.
I'm inclined to agree at this
point.
Yes,
it's very good. I was listening on Marketplace, and they were like interviewing somebody from some European car manufacturer. He said, well, this doesn't make it worse for everyone, because now cars are going to be less affordable. And it's like, yeah. You're probably right. There's actually a good point where it's like, he said, yeah, they'd be less affordable because the reason they're putting everything on the touchscreen is cheaper to make it one touchscreen than it is to make a bunch of bespoke buttons.
I don't care.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing, is everybody's like, okay, cool. You're going to eat that cost because we're not going to spend more money to not have real buttons. So, but what I think is, watch there be a manufactured, like, social media influencer thing of people not liking physical buttons. Like, the fast car slow crowd will be like, I don't like physical buttons. They're passe. Like, no, physical buttons are the correct way to enjoy a vehicle.
I'm angry that I have to tap in to turn my headlights on
manually. You know what my favorite thing in a car is?
A headlight switch?
No, I have a billion fucking buttons. Mm-hmm. Because I know where everything is. Like,
you can do it without looking?
A McLaren Pontiac 3.1 Turbo, that steering wheel.
Yep.
You got a trillion buttons, and every single button's a different size. You know why they're different sizes?
So you can tell without looking down?
Yes, you don't have to look down. You can figure out what the button fucking does.
Oh, it's like the little dimples on your keyboard.
Yes, you know where F and J are. You can now see where everything is from muscle memory.
It's like Past Us went through this exact same goddamn thing and fixed it.
And it's like a lot of people are like, well, you sit in your car, so you know where it is. It's going to be right here or right down here.
Do you know what people do? It's muscle memory.
But you know what else is going to happen when you're turning your car and you're going around a corner and you're trying to switch your volume or something? Mm-hmm. Or you're braking and you're trying to do that, you now have G-forces that are moving your hand away from where you're aiming.
Oh, also.
So you have to look.
All these auto manufacturers love to completely change their UI every 4 years and move stuff with absolutely no regard for muscle memory.
One of the things they were saying is it was to switch the speed of your windshield wipers on the new Volvo. You had to go through four layers of menu. You go like functions, and you had to go to exterior, and you had to go to wipers, and you had to go to wiper speed. It's four different menus.
No.
Yeah, no.
No. Nope.
Absolutely not. Nope. Yeah. And like, this is like a thing that like, actually has been discussed with like in the UX community as well, where a lot of like newer designers are like, we get that you're trying to simplify things and make them less overwhelming, but a point oversimplifying makes things difficult to understand because
you're never going to remember the menu tree.
Yeah. Well, and they're like, all right, well, let's take an older user and put an older user on this app. And this app, all right, tell the older user to log out or to tell the older user to check their private messages. How do you get to that? Oh, you have to go through three different menus to get to private messages. There's not a button on the home
screen.
Hands
the device back. No.
Like, if you put it on the home screen, like, yeah, you might not like it as a designer, but what you like as a designer versus what is actually functional for a human are two very different things.
On your limited, especially with an automotive infotainment system, like, you can configure them in a lot of cases, but you're not allowed to remove certain functions from the home screen.
Yeah, like, for instance, as much as I love, like, Giovanni Michelotti or Cesaro and stuff like that, wedge cars... There's a reason, really? Yeah. There's a reason that Luigi Colani designs moved past them and became like the design standard moving forward, because Colani designed things to be used,
right?
Like, well, they were designed to be easy to enjoy and like intuitive.
Well, designs that are intended to be used, or they're respectful of being maintained and things like that. I mean,
yeah. Intuitive design, like, matters.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. That's exactly the term for it. I couldn't say it better.
No, it's why I like working on my Cresta, because every single thing on every level of that car is entirely intuitive to a fault. Like, there are things that could be designed better, but they're designed intuitively. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I like working on an E39. Like, you do a window regulator, I'm like, wow, there's a hole in the metal here, which you need access to change the window regulator, because it's screwed into a fastener here, where you go one generation newer, not there.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, so somebody actually was deliberate and intentional with the design.
Yeah.
And that is fine, as long as there is a deliberate intention.
Intuitive design, like, that, when people say, oh, why do I like a certain car? Mm-hmm. Like, I look at how it's actually, like, why do I like the last generation Mirage? Because that was an intuitively designed vehicle. Every part of that car was designed with the intention of being a cheap, functional, easy-to-service vehicle that anybody can afford to work on forever.
And it's a world car, so it has to be designed with that in mind in a country with no servicing.
Exactly. Like, so that's why you can take the entire engine out mm-hmm. without disassembling the whole front end of the car.
Right.
Like, it's, I understand that you might like your Audi or whatever because you love your Audi for, I sure, whatever. But the thing is, doing an engine out on an Audi in Turkmenistan would suck. Doing an engine out on a Mirage in Turkmenistan is not a problem. Like,
did you watch the most recent Grand Tour?
No, I don't. I watch all their independent things, though.
So. That's just fine. Anyway, yes. I'll tell you, and they got a Maserati Gran Turismo S convertible, a DB9 convertible auto, and a... Why am I blanking on the thermo? Jeez. Like, anyway, a luxury... Caterham? No, they were all luxury big automatic vehicles. Yeah. Oh, the other one was a F-Type convertible. Okay. But they were running into electrical issues. And, like, these are big V12 packed engine bays. Like, you can literally do nothing in the bush. And that's how it was. Like, he drove in transmission limp mode for, like, 400 miles until they got to a city that had a diagnostic laptop to clear the transcodes. Like, whereas they're so doing ridiculous. The Botswana special, and they're in a Mercedes and Oliver and this terrible Lancia Beta. Shoot a hole in the floor, or you just, like, adjust the cable that controls that thing until it doesn't do the thing anymore.
Yeah. There you go. Problem solved. And like, intuitive design matters, and
it does.
It's more than just a button. Like, people say, and that's what my gripe with modern cars is the screen is only part of the issue. There's a larger overall issue happening here, where cars are designed with the bottom line above all else. Like, it doesn't matter. It's the same problem with Boeing. Like,
oh my god,
they just.
The John Oliver piece.
Yes,
so
what
good.
Matters is the final stock price. How much money did you make? Not how good of a thing did you make. Not how good is your customer.
Oversight.
Like, you have a stock pair. You have a stockholder, sure, that's happy, but you must be really unhappy at stock pair in like 5 years when that person buys another car. Mm-hmm. And that's people have been complaining since like the 60s that there's no more like brand loyalty. It's because brands have been just going towards the bottom of the barrel for years, and some brands have some brands have been doing better than others. That's why everybody flocked to BMWs for 10 years, and now they're flocking elsewhere because BMW's just as bad. I don't even know where they're going anymore.
Who cares? They're going to the Chinese domestic market. That's where they're going.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, is buttons matter, and that's why I named this episode Buttons.
I agree with your naming. I would never push back. I just didn't see that in time. So
yes, anyway.
All right. I want to talk about, corporate styling.
You're going to talk about the new Rivian?
Yes.
So this is the thing. I think that's as cute as a button. But I know it's also Rivian. And I know that as cute as that is, all those body panels are super tight. And if that gets into any accidents, then total it out, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. This area right here in the rear right quarter.
Yeah.
I'm sure if that gets nicked by a golf ball or something like that, that'll be totaled. So the R3X is the Neva-esque. It's been compared to the Lada Neva more times than I care to mention in the last two or three days.
It doesn't look like a Neva. It looks like a Fiat Panda.
Yes, that's true. But first gen, 90s one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have as much an issue with this
A Volkswagen Golf Country.
Yes, yeah, because it's raised with much
just
less.
Just like a country, yep. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that 4x4 one. But yeah, even the Panda, the special edition Panda, looks just like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but the Golf Country came in a four-door.
The Panda didn't?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But well, I know the Golf Country came in a four-door, so it's a Golf Country. Anyway.
Hollish. But they did a non-cladded, slightly lower version of this, just called the R3.
Okay.
And, like, that thing is just meh. I love the Rivian front end. It's not in this article. Let me search it. Rivian R3. Non-X. This. I
like that.
I couldn't be bothered.
It's a terrible color.
But like, my issue is they're stretching the pickup truck and SUV front end over a little... It's not even little. It's a CUV that... And this is a rendering, too. But
I think my larger issue at hand here is the fact that I know that Rivians are designed in such a way that if there's anything that happens to them, they're totaled immediately. So these are appliances.
I would
they're
like just to fancy know if they fix that.
Yeah, no, they're just fancy appliances. Until I find out that you can actually fix the car, it's a fancy appliance. That's why I don't care about Rivians anymore.
Rivian's tech is fantastic, but they really should completely change their design language if they're going to do cars.
Well, I don't know. It's like, it looks good. Like, it genuinely looks good. It's just at my...
The rear three quarters, fine.
The front end, I'm okay with. I don't really care about the front end. Look. Yeah, see, that's exactly what I
literally
in
a golf
yeah.
country. I just...
I'm fine with the front end.
I love
end.
The face it's of whatever. Rivians. It doesn't work on a hatch.
I guess Sure. I mean, I guess you're right. I don't know. I'm more like...
This is one of the things I'm not used to.
I have a larger issue.
Okay.
But I can't even get to the point where I'm upset about a front end. Because my larger issue is the fact that I can't get to a point of caring about the front end. Because I know that if I were to buy one of these, I cannot keep it.
Here.
Because if anything happens to it... Like, there's that lady that backed into Janna's car and is now a felon because of that.
Great.
I told you about that. About the reason it's a tiny dent in the back of the Lexus.
No.
Oh, a lady, I was at Hamlin and University, and a lady was in the turn lane and didn't want to be in the turn lane. She had a plastic bag for a window, so she backed up and didn't see the Lexus and hit the quarter panel, like indented the quarter panel on the driver's side a little bit. And then she ran from the scene, so I called the cops. I'm like, I tried like three stop signs. I'm like, lady, can you just pull over so we can exchange information? And she went, she said, I'm late for an appointment. I'm like,
so?
I don't care. You hit my car. And she goes, it's not even damage. I'm like, I'm looking in my rearview mirror. I see damage. It's yeah. damage. We need to exchange information. So she drove all the way to her appointment, and I called the police. I'm like, I'm chasing this lady to hit my car. And they're like, please don't chase. And I'm like, well, you need to come here and do something about it then, because I'm going to continue chasing her. Like, and so anyway, she goes to her appointment, goes into her appointment. I'm in my car. A state trooper arrives. She's issued a felony ticket for fleeing the scene of an accident. For what was realistically just a $500 fucking thing. And so, like, totally fucked up the lady. Then she failed to show up for court and had a warrant put out for her.
People are so dumb.
Yeah. Like
I got hit and run in the Tesla in the fucking parking lot a couple weeks ago, too, and I'm still waiting on that. But
yeah, no, this lady, I saw her do it.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't care. I just want to exchange information. If you don't have insurance, it's fine. Just let me know. Let's just stop for a second. And she didn't want to do that. And she chose to ruin her life over that.
Yeah, great. Now you're a felon.
Like, and that's the thing is, like, I needed to have the police report for the actual insurance claim. And so I'm like, lady, I already called the cops. Like, just stop here and it'll be fine. I'll tell them it happened here. Like, it's whatever. And she's like, no, I need to go. I'm like, ma'am, I genuinely don't care. And I don't think your doctor or whoever is going to care that some shit happened. Like, oh, well, we'll be fine. And now she's extremely late for every appointment because I imagine she's in jail now.
Wow. Great.
Yeah.
I did not
but
know
anyway,
that.
But anyway, the
what
thing
a great
is, if
week.
One of those situations happened in a Rivian...
When?
My truck would
when?
Be, yeah, at any point, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if one of those happened, I was driving a Rivian, my truck would be totaled.
Yep.
And so, with a Lexus, it's not. It's fine. You just get a body puller, then it's fine. Like,
or you could live with a Camry dent.
It's not even a Camry dent. It's just in the quarter panel. It's not on the bumper.
Oh, fine.
You'll see it when you go outside.
Okay.
It's not that big of a deal. Like, it's entirely... I notice it, but don't think anybody else does.
Oh, that sucks.
And yeah, it does suck. And like,
Scott got hit by an uninsured X4 too when he was going downtown to continue to sue Volkswagen.
Yeah, and I felt bad about doing it, but like also like I don't feel bad about that lady's choices.
Oh, you gave her many opportunities. It
like I even told her, I'm like, man, I literally just need to exchange your information. Like that is literally all. Like it's going to take 2 seconds. We can get phone numbers, and then I will call you later. Like that's it. I just need to have a phone number. So. You know, like your driver's license number, maybe. So I'll wait for the cops here. You can go on in your life.
Yep.
It's whatever.
Make your appointment.
Like,
don't get a
I had every intention of doing that, and she just chose not to do that. She chose to escalate and escalate and escalate and escalate herself into court. Well,
which she didn't show up for.
And she didn't show up for. Now she has a warrant.
Great. This is just fantastic.
I was nice, and they're like, when she didn't show up for court, they're like, hey, we're pressing additional charges. Now is your time to press additional charges on your end to her. Is there anything that you want to sue her for? And I thought about it. I'm like, ooh, actually, I could just get this body work done for free. But I'm like, you know what? This lady's already fucked up her life. Like,
the felony's probably bad enough. We'll let her
go. I'm going to let her go on this. I could not be bothered because this is more time out of my life. Like, she clearly isn't going to show up. It's just going to be worse for everyone. God. $500 sucks for me, but like,
if it's actually 500, which it probably is,
it's like five to seven Lexus, is so. What. Like Heppner's quote, like 5 to 7.
That's not bad.
It's like still like that's all my.
God, the little scrape on my front bumper is $2,600 on the Model X.
Well, it didn't like do anything on the paint. It's just I have to pull the quarter panel out.
Okay, so
yeah,
that's okay.
And so it's fine. It's just like it's like one paycheck's worth of money that I would spend on things. I'd be tight for like a pay period. It's just like
anyway.
It's just annoying. It's annoying, but like hey. Oh, well, a little bit of money for me versus her having not being able to vote.
Like, it's a certain...
that's her choice, though. Like, I gave her the opportunity not to make that choice.
And I believe you.
Yeah. Like, she absolutely chose to do this, and now she can't vote or own a gun or leave the country.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things, she can't, like that.
There's a lot of things she can't do. Well, get jobs in certain, many fields, actually.
I think it's legal to discriminate, at least in that capacity, right? You have the choice to not hire
a
felon.
Yeah, so you lose your right to carry a gun. You cannot serve on a jury, run for office, or vote.
She was going to run for office. I know it.
Yeah, I'm sure. What are the cons of being a felon?
What are the cons of being a felon?
You can't get a job. You can't get public benefits. Shit, she can't get public benefits.
Oh, no.
That's actually a problem because she was clearly
using public. If she has a paper bag, sorry, plastic bag. God damn it, plastic bag is a window.
Yeah,
paper bag.
Sorry, lady, I can't travel. It's difficult to find a home. Like, you did this yourself, lady. Sorry. Like, you could have just. Yeah, I see why I feel bad. Like,
I do, but also it's not like your car was parked. You weren't there. Then this happened.
No, like, her. I was also blowing my horn at her while she was backing into my car. Like, I gave her, like, I saw her put her reverse lights on and blow my horn.
I wish you had a dash cam.
And then I saw her go like this, and I blew my horn and laid on my horn, and then she hit my car, and then I was continuing to blow on my horn, and I rolled my window down. I went, what the fuck, lady? Like,
and you are many things, Ryan, but inconspicuous is not one of them.
Yes, I'm extremely loud. Like, she had every opportunity to stop what she was doing.
Conspicuous.
Yes. She had every opportunity. Anyway.
Let's talk about more not bad things.
I want to talk about Datsun made a prototype engine as well. And this is a twin cam Datsun L series cylinder head.
I think we've talked about this.
This is the thing is they're actually. It is a prototype they have no intention, quote unquote, of making.
Uh-huh.
But they're sending it out to gauge interest from the public.
Interesting. So
sounds like
it's in production then.
Yeah. They're gonna make it. But what reminded me is the OS Gaiken TC24.
Mm-hmm.
It's now, as quoting Japanese nostalgia car, decades old. And now I feel very old.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of one of the recurring themes for today. Is
what
like
the hell? It's decades old. What's wrong with you, Ben? Why'd you write it like that? Stop it.
Make us feel old. Older than we already do.
Yeah, so it's...
But I mean, this is still,
here, scroll down,
still
scroll
tremendous.
Down, scroll down, scroll down, scroll down, scroll down. This isn't the first Twin Cam L Series conversion. OS Gaiken built their own version decades ago. Motherfucker.
Twin cam heads can't hurt you.
There's also another one that was made by Datsun Works, which is based off a K-Series engine.
Well, I know we've talked about the OSG one before, but...
But the Nismo one's kind of cool. I also love the design of it.
I love so the Nismo script on this valve cover?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It looks... Yeah, there's an old school logo. Like, I love that. It looks so good, and I hope
it's on that oil cap, too. God damn.
I really like this. It's just makes generally
me want
a good
an L series powered car, just so I can put that head on it.
I would like an L series that's not even that head, just the reverse flows. They're all great.
Well, yeah, but I like how that looks.
Yeah, no, it looks great. But I mean, like all of them are good. Well, are very, very good.
It's true. I should just talk to Vintage Steve. I know he has a 510 with an L28 in it that Vintage races.
I just thought that was kind of interesting. That's pretty cool. I hope Nissan actually makes it for a reasonable price.
God damn it. Just put it on the screen too for people.
Boy.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I'm just a mess.
It looks beautiful. It's
this
a great
valve cover reminds me of the first gen, the Hokosuka.
Yeah, that's actually a fun fact is that's what this is for, is for people doing Hokosuka conversions or people that want to preserve their S20. they can put an L series into it because they made a billion of these.
Well, I was going to say, the L28 and the L24 are pretty ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And very, very good engines.
Yeah, so you could put one of these into a Hikosca and it'll save you from having to put miles on an S20. You could also make a better GTR conversion with that cylinder head, which would actually be cooler than marginally cooler, depending on how many of these they make. S20s are pretty cool.
I don't know. The L series engine makes a phenomenal sound. So I would love to hear a sound clip of this, but I can't do that in this current situation right now.
Yes, also they don't have any sound clips available.
That's fine. They're gauging interest, which means we'll see it in showrooms in about a year.
Hopefully.
We will cover it at that time once again. But
We will come back to this.
Just like the twin cam Buick, or it's our Oldsmobile engine, not Buick. I know there's a distinction there. I like when companies do weird shit with existing product.
That's cool.
My final topic, I got to talk about this. I know we beat this into a pulp here, but the new Charger, 2 and 4-door, looks kind of like the old Challenger. The biggest thing, though, it uses the old Dodge Polara logo. Mm-hmm. I was scrolling through this announcement on Facebook, and I don't know why the hell I was on Facebook, because I don't have the app anymore, but I was paging through the images in the press release, looking at the boomer comments. Oh, the Hurricane Slant 6, it makes 600 horsepower, but it's not a V8. Don't make the noise. And I was like, what's that, a Mitsubishi logo? And just like, the sideshow.
If you if you go back to the notes, I put a link where you said Mitsubishi, quote unquote Mitsubishi logo, and you'll see what the original Dodge Polara logo looked like in era. That's a logo they made.
Mm-hmm.
They made the Polara logo.
It's a fantastic logo.
Yep,
it looks great, and the fact that boomers are thinking that that's...
It's not even boomers. It's like, that's a level... Because boomers know what that is.
I'm not so sure.
No, they do. Because they were around for that era.
But the people I was clicking on that were making these comments were aged.
Did you look at what they actually looked like? Were they possibly borderline illiterate Gen Xers?
They might have been.
It sounds like you saw a bunch of borderline illiterate Gen Xers.
That might be the case.
That's the thing, is boomers are actually kind of rare these days. Because they're pretty old.
That's true.
They've got like one foot in the grave. But now, the borderline illiterate Gen Xer crowd, there's a lot of them.
I stand corrected.
The people that have sunglasses and they're sitting inside their truck, those are usually borderline illiterate Gen Xers.
Oh, I work with those people. Yeah, I work in construction.
Yeah.
I get you.
A lot of people like that.
But yeah, I'm trying to struggle with
this. This is my thing. I'm totally don't care about this.
I don't either.
But this is the thing. First off, an EV muscle car is exactly what America needs for an EV. Because a muscle car is what makes everything go in America. As soon as you make a muscle car version of it, Americans did not like fuel injection until there was a good fuel injected muscle car.
And we're not trapping them into it with this, because this, unfortunately, it's a compromised platform, because it was engineered originally just to be EV only, but they later compromised, put the Hurricane in it also,
because it's an extremely tough sale.
Correct.
So have you seen the numbers on what they're looking at projecting for retaining ownership?
From existing Chargers and Challengers? No, but I would guess it's extremely
Challengers,
high.
Challengers, 6%.
Really?
Chargers, 4%.
I'm retaining surprised by that.
People that own one and say that they would replace their car with the EV. They're that
just
low.
The electric one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which also...
That's would, probably it, why they put
that,
the... Well,
no, that, that's why they put the 6 in there, because they're going to try and bump that back up to in the 20s maybe. But... this is the thing, is as much as we need a EV muscle car to make EVs cool in America, because like that's what it's required every other time there's been any sort of change in anything, is when did like fuel injection become acceptable in America? It's like the Mustang was consistently fuel injected and actually good and better.
The 80s or 90s?
This is 90s, yeah. Because like you had the 80s, it was 86 is when you had modern Bosch fuel injection in the Fox Body Mustang. You didn't have the weird toilet bowl garbage that GM had. Then GM in 97 made the LS, which actually became a good power-making engine that was affordable to everyone.
Right, and it wasn't the tune port abomination that was on
exactly.
the third gen.
Yeah, you didn't have the LT1 bullshit with the spider injector garbage.
Well, they even had a port-injected one, but they screwed it up still because they screwed up the breathing.
That's what a spider injector is a port injection. It is a toilet bowl injector that goes to ports that you can later put like normal EFI.
What am I thinking of then? Because they did have a Corvette intake manifold that had two injectors per cylinder, fuel injectors, like electronic injectors.
You're thinking of the spider injector one, because it's actually those aren't solenoid injectors. You might be thinking of the later, like the the twin cam LT ones. But as far as the...
No, not the LT4.
They also made, with the like the 90s stuff, like you had... You actually, no, you might be right, because they did change it up a bunch.
Because the spider injector...
But the other thing is
like batch fire.
But this is the other issue.
Yeah.
Is they had so many different, like, fucked up half... fix variants that they couldn't figure out on their own,
uh-huh.
that people were done with it by the time they had figured it
correct.
Out.
Correct, yeah. Like, okay, yeah. I thought Spider, and Tucker would actually probably know this, but I thought that was kind of like
I have no idea. I cannot be bothered enough, because the thing is, I prefer carburetors for V8s. It makes sense to me. And it's simple, and they
it's on brand for them, for sure.
They don't need to like rev or anything. They don't need to be good. Like,
really, they just need to be wet.
Yeah, they need to be wet, and they need to go to like maybe 5,000 RPM, possibly. Like, that's what a V8 should do.
Yeah, those valves are really floating.
Yeah.
just but
like, I appreciate, you know, Fox bodies and LS stuff. But like, the thing is, it wasn't until that era where fuel injection got accepted in America.
Right, it was decades after it became
exactly.
viable.
And even with the 5 mph crash bumpers, like that was a thing where you really had to work it into the front end of a muscle car to make people care about it.
That took maybe 30 years.
Well, I wouldn't say like 30, but like it definitely took until the third generation Camaro for it to be accepted to a degree. Mm-hmm. Because the third generation Camaro wasn't just like a re-facelifted,
that's true.
Better, like the previous version was better looking. This is one that's designed to have that.
That's actually a pretty modern looking car for the era it came out.
Yeah, for 1982.
Yeah.
In 1977 for the Fox body, which like also did that.
That's true.
But
God, the Fox body's old.
Yeah, whenever you think of like these like big changes, it took a muscle car to get Americans to accept it. I think an EV muscle car is going to be what you need. But the thing is you need to have like really fucking silly amounts of range on an EV muscle car. Because there's two things that
you're attracting the Hummer EV buyer with these things.
Yeah. Well there's two giant hurdles that you have to get over. First off, Dodge owners don't think ahead and they're not patient.
You could have stopped at the think.
Yeah. But like they don't think ahead usually, because it's usually like young kids that are going out for the night. And, like, they're not going to be patient. They're not going to sit there and charge your car for a while. Like, you charge your phone, but you charge your phone while you're playing video games, right? You don't charge your phone while you're, you know, at the gas station.
Right.
So that's one part. And the other thing is the range anxiety, is you need to take whatever range you think somebody's going to want and then double that. Like,
yikes.
Yeah.
That's going to be wild, because, I mean, Mopars are historically pretty heavy.
Yeah, they're heavy and bad.
Driven
and
poorly.
Yes, and so you're going to need, like, 800-plus miles of range.
It's going to be a while.
Yeah, you're going to need 800 miles of range. Realistically, you only need, like, 100 or 200, but with how people drive Mopars, all right, you're going to be getting the worst efficiency out of this car.
I think...
So I think 800 will, you'll be able to get a 300-mile-an-hour drive out of that.
Whatever the, yeah, and you're right, the real-world range is really what matters.
Yeah.
And I think once we crest 400 miles real-world, we're going to get a lot of those people.
And well, that's the thing, is 400 miles, sure. But, like, also, you have to think of, well, in their minds, they can just refill gas and be on their way. So it's... It doesn't matter.
Real world range, though.
Yeah,
not
no, but what I'm saying is, like, in their minds, when they see, like, oh, this can go 400 miles, and they go, yeah, but what happens at 500? I have to fill up gas, and that just takes me 5 minutes, but I have to charge my car. It takes half an hour. It's like, that's something that's never, ever going to happen. So you have to have, like, basically unlimited range. Like, you have to have an oil change interval.
And we're not talking to critical thinkers here.
Yeah, so. No, absolutely not. So you're basically going to need, like, an F-150 Lightning amount of range.
Well, like, more than that. That, I mean, that thing's only got 200 and high 200s.
Oh, high 200s. Yeah. So you're gonna need like just like silly amounts of range to go into one of these.
I agree.
But I think once you get that, because at the end of the day, this is also a crowd of people that genuinely don't give a shit about history. Like, as soon as you get away from people that previously owned the V8, and remember the V8s, you're gonna be just fine, because it's not like anybody that has a modern Mopar would go, oh, these sound really cool. You know what sounded cooler than this? A Max Wedge sounded cooler than this. Like,
I just want people to stop trying to silence the sound of an electric powertrain.
And that's another thing, is Dodge is also sitting here making fake V8 noises. Where it shouldn't make a fake V8 noise. it should make an electric, like, give me a very angry weed whacker noise. Like, I want it to sound like a Formula E car. Like, take every piece of sound deadening out of that motor. Put that motor behind, like, a piece of plexiglass, if anything, to make it, like, waterproof.
But the problem is, I think they need to figure out a way to be able to do that when you want to be a hooligan and make it not super loud when you're just dailying it. And I think that's probably a bit tricky.
Does that matter?
Well, actually, probably not to a mopar owner.
No, right. It doesn't.
Wow, this is deafening and terrible. I love it.
Yeah, because, like, have you ever driven an 8-speed Challenger?
I have not.
It is not. Proud of that fact. Is not an enjoyable experience if you're trying to drive it as a normal car. But if you're trying to drive it like a jackass, it's great.
I mean, it's rear-wheel drive, it's got a ton of wheel speed, and it's got wheelbase. So it's probably a good hooligan car.
Yeah, and so, like, as long as you drive like a jackass, you're fine. And so,
well, good news.
That's, yeah.
That's me.
And so I think that a Dodge, like, as long as this can go to, like, a sideshow and just be, like, a dipshit car, then you'll be fine.
I think we're going to hit that range, the quoted range, that they're going to look at on this TikTok post that they bought their subprime 900-month loan mortgage.
Which, unfortunately, is a way that they sell cars.
It is, but you also have to give them what the Hellcat gave Mopars. You have to give them, like, are you kidding me? I can buy a 1,500-horsepower car and show off to my friends?
Oh, it needs to be 2,000, yeah.
Oh, it will be, easily. Yeah.
No, they have to have a 2,000-horsepower sedan.
It needs to be a rear-wheel drive.
Yeah, or all-wheel and lights up all four.
I got an idea. The red key, bring it back, rear-wheel drive only.
Yeah.
And it automatically voids your insurance policy when you put it in the ignition.
Perfect, brilliant, yeah.
Because you're just going to sideshow with that key.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's exactly what you do. Like, I think that'd be really, really smart. So,
excellent.
That's how Dodge can sell these. I'm not going to buy one because I don't care.
Well, I'm not either. But
like, this is the thing with, like, EVs is, like, you need to. People are really overthinking things. I think that the key is going to be sell it as a muscle car, make it as stupid as possible and fast as possible, and give it insane range.
Yep.
And make it cheap. Doesn't have to be good.
No, just give it really long financing. Doesn't even need to be cheap.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, cheap. Per month.
Sure. Yeah. You're right.
You need to be able to afford it monthly. Yeah.
I can afford that payment is what needs
also,
to go through their head.
Speaking of monthly payments, I'm really proud of the guy that works at the Culver's next to my house. He now drives a Mazda Speed 3.
Heck yeah. I mean, God, I hope it holds together.
It won't. I know. It's a very shitty Mazda Speed 3.
Oh no.
But hey, he now makes monthly payments on Mazda Speed 3. I'm proud of him.
Who gave him a loan on that?
I don't know. But somebody did. You must have really good credit. Good for him.
And on that incredibly future depressing note, we'll catch you guys next week.